Welcome to the Issue Is podcast on a historic week for politics in California and around the country. This week, we had the State of the Union. We also had Super Tuesday in California, which was the end of the Senate primary that we've been covering for over a year. Adam Schiff, Steve Garvey, both advancing, both of them, by the way, historical trivia, gave their first interviews of their Senate campaigns to The Issue Is. So I guess it's good luck to talk with us. We didn't talk with Garvey this week. We asked, but he turned us down. But we did talk with Schiff at his campaign headquarters in Burbank. We will play you that in a moment. We also want to tell you that we got some analysis on all the big stories of the week from two of my favorites, Brian Goldsmith and Mike Murphy. Really enjoyed talking with them, and we've got an extended version of that conversation in a little bit. But let's start off at Adam Schiff's campaign headquarters the day after winning Super Tuesday in a very dominant, quick fashion, much quicker than almost anybody expected, including him. And here is that conversation. Congressman Adam Schiff, welcome back to The Issue Is, and congratulations.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
I know you launched your campaign on our show. You did our first debate with us, and now your first in-person interview after this with us. So I guess we're good luck for you.
You
right?
are good luck. You are good luck.
And you launched our show. You were there for our first episode.
Yeah, I guess I'm good luck.
We've been doing this a long time. So we know you really wanted to be first. We know you really wanted Steve Garvey to be second. How are you feeling right now?
We feel great. We ran, I think, a really strong campaign, and I think our message of delivering for California, of putting results over rhetoric, of being willing to lead in the tough fights for our democracy, but also looking for opportunities to get things done, to bring down housing costs, to bring down childcare costs, I think that resonated, and I think there's a message for other Democrats around the country here that we need to move away from just the performative politics, the emphasis on how many views you can get, how many clicks you can get, as opposed to how much good you can do.
You know, going into it, there was a lot of thought that Katie Porter would frankly be closer. The race wasn't that close. Are you surprised by that?
A bit surprised by that, but I do think, and this was really clear when we would travel around the state, people were looking for, okay, what have you done? What are you going to do to try to improve the quality of our life? And, the emphasis on all the performative stuff just didn't resonate.
Have Congresswoman Porter or Congresswoman Lee called to congratulate you or concede?
No.
What do you make of that?
Look, I've been there myself. It's hard. I've won races. I've lost races. They're two incredible colleagues. Just tremendous respect for them. But it's tough.
Do you foresee working with them or campaigning with them or bringing them into this process?
Of course. I mean, they're both good Democrats. They're going to work to help elect other Democrats. I think there's a real opportunity in California to win back the majority in the House just by winning some of these California races. I also want to do whatever I can to help my colleagues in the state and around the country.
To that point, that has been one of Katie Porter's main criticisms of you as of late, that spending all this money to tell conservatives that Steve Garvey is conservative has brought out Republicans to vote, and that will hurt Democrats in the fall, that if you had Democrat versus Democrat, you wouldn't have as many Republicans voting. What do you say to that criticism that you are making it harder for Democrats to win back the House?
I think there's only one Democrat who buys that argument, who would think that one Democrat spending millions against another Democrat to beat each other up was a good idea for the party, instead of being able to use those resources to elect other Democrats. Much as we might like to think in the Senate race that we are the ones driving turnout, this is a presidential year. It is the candidates for president that are going to drive turnout. So I'm going to do everything I can to get Democrats elected up and down the ballot, but spending millions and millions of dollars attacking each other as Democrats wouldn't suit anyone's interest in the Democratic Party, for sure.
So for critics that say that was just a cynical ploy and all the rest of it, you say...
I heard that from one of my Democratic colleagues who used the same advertising strategy. So I think that argument works well with people who are not from California, don't understand the jungle primary. But here, the result would have been exactly the same if we had a closed primary. That is, we dominated in support among Democrats. And got a lot of crossover support too.
In terms of Steve Garvey, did you call him to congratulate him? Did he call you to congratulate you?
I didn't, and he didn't. I do extend my congratulations to him. I think he ran a very good campaign. And it's a little bit different, when you both make a runoff, to call each other and congratulate each other is a little weird.
Yeah.
But I do certainly extend my congratulations.
We hosted the first debate in the primary. Would you want to be part of a debate in the fall? Are you committed to debating him?
Oh, I am definitely committed to debating him, but I will leave it to my team to be discussing the different venues.
Okay, well,
you did a magnificent job.
Open invitation. I am shameless, as you know. What does that race look like? Draw us the map for the next few months.
I'm going to continue going up and down the state and trying to get to know each of the communities from the far south to the far north. What are people looking for? And when I travel the state, I don't tell people what I'm going to do for them. I ask them, what can I do to help? I'm going to continue making the contrast with Mr. Garvey. He is never going to protect reproductive freedom. He's never going to stand up to the NRA. He's never going to push for universal health care. He's never going to aggressively attack climate change. He never is going to lift the minimum wage. He likes it right where it is at $7. So we're going to be pointing out all the contrasts.
Although he says that he would protect reproductive freedom.
Well, if you believe that, I've got a bridge I want to sell you.
Okay, so you don't believe him on that front.
I mean, this is someone who supported a constitutional ban on abortion at one point. And much as I think he is trying to remake himself, there's no hiding his Trumpian...
Well, I mean, isn't that the danger in the strategy that you employed? Because you helped lift him up with conservatives. He didn't have to take that many positions in the primary, and now he has an opportunity to be a more moderate candidate. Are you in any way worried that he runs as a moderate candidate, runs against the system, and potentially connects with people that are fans of his from baseball and are looking for something different?
I think he's certainly going to try. I think he's going to be spectacularly unsuccessful. Californians want someone who can deliver. They're not looking for another celebrity candidate who can't deliver.
The big issue right now is what's happening in Israel and Gaza. Your victory speech basically interrupted by protesters chanting for a ceasefire now. Do you believe in an immediate ceasefire? And if you don't, what can happen to help get there?
First of all, I'm glad I live in a country where people can protest and can't express dissent, and I'm determined to make sure that come November we continue to live in a democracy where people can dissent. In terms of the war in Gaza, what I'm hoping for and what is on the table right now is a deal in which there is a pause in the violence to release hostages, to get more aid into Gaza, to get more supplies, medical and food. I don't advocate a permanent ceasefire that would permanently entrench a terrorist organization like Hamas governing Gaza, because there will never be peace as long as part of the West Bank or Gaza is run by a terrorist organization bent on a genocidal campaign against Israel.
But when you see some of those images out of Gaza and you see those starving children, I mean, do you feel like Israel has gone too far?
My heart breaks for that loss of life in Gaza, and my heart breaks for the loss of life in Israel. There are victims in Israel, and there are victims in Gaza. The perpetrator here, the cause of all this violence, has been Hamas. And that Hamas would continue to use Palestinian people as human shields and embed itself in civilian areas, will not agree to this proposed cessation of the violence, tells you all you need to know about that terrorist group.
But isn't it possible that two things can be true at once, that Hamas was bad, but Israel's gone too far?
It is certainly true that Hamas is terrible and instigated this conflict and perpetuates it. It is also true that we have to try much harder to reduce civilian loss of life and to get more aid. I am worried about the humanitarian disaster in Gaza. None of us can be unmoved by the images from Gaza, but the path to a lasting peace has to be an end to terrorist rule of Gaza, and it has to be two states.
Just a couple quick questions on a personal note. I know we've been talking for a long time, and I remember talking to you maybe a decade ago about the possibility of this Senate seat and the possibility of you running when Dianne Feinstein decided to run for another term. I know this has been something you've been thinking about. How does it feel for you to be in this moment, to be surrounded by your wife, your brothers, your daughter, to be at an election night party, and to be on the cusp of making this happen.
I feel incredibly lucky. We built a wonderful campaign. We have an incredible campaign staff. I couldn't ask for more in a wife than Eve. I've got two wonderful kids. So I feel very, very charmed.
I mean, did you have a private moment where you all sort of looked at each other last night?
Oh, yes. And there were some expletives involved.
In a good way?
Oh, in a good way, yes. The first began with holy.
That you're here, that it's really happening.
You know, we felt good coming into election night. And the polling looked good. But you never know. And so much is often turns on who turns out to vote. We knew our supporters were the most determined to vote, so that made us feel good. But you never know, so we were quite elated.
Just real succinctly, where is your headspace right now after this over a year of campaigning, going up and down the state, talking to so many millions of people, and now to get this verdict from the people of California?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I have this election night tradition. I won't tell you where I go, but I go alone somewhere to just think about if I have this chance to serve, how can I be most effective, and what my priority should be. And as I was looking at the mountains and thinking about this, you know, I was struck by the fact that this incredible, huge state with the most incredible wilderness and with bears and lions and millions of hardworking people, you know, the opportunity to represent such an incredible place would be a tremendous honor. And I was really quite struck by the enormity of the responsibility, if I'm lucky enough to get it, but also what a great opportunity it will be to serve.
Congratulations. Good luck on the campaign trail. We hope to see you at the debate.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Congressman Adam Schiff. Our thanks to Congressman Schiff. Now to our conversation with Mike Murphy and Brian Goldsmith about where we go from here, about the Senate race, about Prop 1, about the path ahead when it comes to the State of the Union, and even Oscars. Here is all of that, but let's start with some sound from Steve Garvey.
This is the first game of a doubleheader. So keep the evening of November 5th open.
Republican baseball legend Steve Garvey moves on to the November election to face off against Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff. No Republican has won statewide in California since 2006. Let's talk about what's next with our Issue Is panel. Brian Goldsmith is a former journalist who now works as a Democratic strategist. Also with us is Mike Murphy, the co-host of Hacks on Tap podcast. He's a longtime Republican strategist who worked with John McCain, Mitt Romney, Jeb Bush, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Welcome to both of you. I know you're very close friends and have never been on TV together, so this is kind of fun to have both of you here together. Mike, you won the last statewide race with a Republican when you were advising Arnold Schwarzenegger. What would your advice be to Steve Garvey?
You know, I'm tempted. I voted for Garvey in the primary because I do what Adam Schiff tells me to do, clearly. And without his largest donor, Schiff, who ran a cynical but very effective strategy, hat tip to my friend Larry Gersolano over in that campaign, it's California. So I'd be tempted to steal all the campaign money and, you know, leave town because it's mathematically very hard for a Republican now to win.
Is it impossible?
Well, I'll never say impossible, because if something like that ever happens, it's in a year where the country is hell-bent on firing the president, which is where the numbers are right now. The problem is the Republican Party, my party, in all its infinite wisdom, nominated the one guy that even Biden very well may be able to beat, Donald Trump. So I actually think Garvey gets a little bit of a bad rap. I think he's a good guy, but boy, this is uphill. So if I were him, I wouldn't borrow any money.
You're somebody who's in regular communication with Adam Schiff. What would your advice be to him?
Well, to do what he's doing, which is not take this for granted, and also to work for a Democratic House, because that will raise the chance that anything he passes in the Senate or works for will actually become law, which is the sort of stuff he cares about. But, you know, a bad Democratic year in California is the presidential nominee only winning by 22 or 24 instead of 28 or 29. So Schiff would really have to screw up to lose.
I mean, do you think, though, Mike, that there's a way that Garvey, who is liked, by, especially by an older generation, who mm-hmm. sees him more as a baseball legend than as a politician, who could run against the system, run against the deficit and the homelessness and the crime, and try to be something moderate in the center? I mean, is there maybe a way to do that?
Well, it's so hard. I mean, I'd like to say there is, and he might be able to close it a little bit, but I think he's going to be the senator from Kern County. You know, it's just the numbers are hard. It would be like a really good Democrat moving to Utah to run for Senate there. This is not a swing state anymore. And even back in my day with Arnold, Arnold was a fusion candidate. He was not defined purely as a Republican. He was a Republican plus. And Garvey will try to do that, but, you know, in the polarized era we have now, really, really hard. Yeah, he needs a very low turnout election with older voters, maybe an off-year election, rather than a presidential where you get caught up in the
partisanship. And let's be honest, Garvey only had a campaign because Adam Schiff gave him one. He didn't have the money to run statewide TV. He wasn't doing very much. His campaign was kind of transplanted on by the senator-elect, soon-to-be senator-elect.
And, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger was way more famous, way more yes. rich, and had a wife who was married to one of the biggest Democratic families in the history of the country. Okay, let's talk about what we have seen since that race. Katie Porter got Ooh. Trounced, right? I mean, she lost by 15 yeah. points, which was not what the polls were showing.
Right.
And since then, she suggested that the election was rigged by billionaires and dark money who was working against her. There were a lot of folks in crypto that spent yeah. millions of dollars against her. Adam Schiff spent a lot of money to get Steve Garvey in there. Right. But what do you make of that claim that the election was rigged?
Well, it wasn't rigged. That's irresponsible to say. Now, she did get outspent 2-1 and outraised. You know, you got to give Schiff credit, better fundraising. Second, you did have these crypto guys come in of $8 or $10 million and clobber her. But she earned a lot of it. You know, if you look at where the Democratic establishment, the pals who work with her and Schiff, they were almost all with Schiff. So, you know, these are the kind of sour grape things you're allowed to yell at your brother-in-law driving back from the campaign concession speech. But venting it in public is just therapy. It looks small. And she lost for a reason, her.
And you see, she didn't even show up to, appears to be, it to the State of the Union this week either.
She seems to be a very sore loser. I mean, saying rigged election is like saying Voldemort in Democratic politics because, you know, Trump has introduced those words and that toxic force into our politics, and it's absolutely unacceptable to Democratic voters. She should have graciously conceded an election that she lost by almost 20 points. She started virtually tied with Adam Schiff. She ran a terrible campaign. The more the voters saw her, the less they liked her. And if she wants a future in California politics, which I assume she does, she better clean this up, which she still hasn't.
If she runs again, I've got one bit of advice for her. Don't campaign so much. Not a good candidate.
I will give you credit. You came on the issue as you said she's going to be great at her first showing. And the question right. is going to be her second showing. Do people get exhausted of her the second time they right. see her? And it turns out you were pretty prescient.
And notable, her own campaign did not include her voice in their ads. Her very smart ad makers understood that she was not necessarily an asset to the image that they were trying to present.
Really interesting on the ballot was Proposition 1. Governor Newsom went all in on this to try to get mental health beds in California. He was the face of it. And it's unclear still, as we record this, whether this thing is going to pass. It's hovering right there at 50%. What do you make of how this is going?
Well, I mean, the cute, glib response is it's hard to lose running unopposed. But that's actually not true when you're promoting an initiative. And usually the default is no rather than yes. And this was an older electorate, a more conservative electorate. And they see billions of dollars in new debt for California at a time when the economy's booming and we already have billions of dollars of debt. I don't think that this was viewed so favorably. And secondly, Newsom was the face of it. Newsom's approval rating is not where it was 6 months ago, and so he may not have been the most effective spokesperson.
Yeah, my guess is it'll squeak through on the very last votes, but it's closer than they thought, because they had a big multi-million dollar campaign in the governor of a Democratic state. And here we are, you know, closer than they expected. So it's an embarrassment for the governor, but I don't, he will move beyond this. But I'm sure there were a lot of white knuckles in Newsom world on election night because they expected to be able to win this thing and they had the money to do it. Electorate didn't sign up. And as you say, no is easier.
Yeah, but if you still get to yes, you only need to win 50% right. plus
no
one, you still win. Yeah.
Opponents. I mean, nobody's spending.
And even a
TV.
Lot of Republicans signed on to it as well.
Yeah.
Up next, the panel is back to talk about the State of the Union.
Border Patrol Union has endorsed this bill. The Federal Chamber of Commerce is. Yeah, yeah. You're saying low. Look at the facts. I know you know how to read.
President Biden, louder and more aggressive than we've seen him in years during this week's State of the Union. It fired up Democrats, frustrated Republicans. But what about swing voters? Back with our panel, strategists Brian Goldsmith and Mike Murphy. Brian, does that work with the people you need, that 100,000 or so people in the middle of the country?
Jolton Joe. I loved it. I think it will work. The CNN instant poll showed 64-65% of the audience thought that his policies put the country on the right track, which is very different from the polling before the speech. I think the coverage of the speech, which is how most people are going to view it, is going to be very positive with a lot of energetic, substantive sound bites on popular policies from abortion rights to gun violence protection, raising the minimum wage. I think it was as good as Joe Biden could have done.
What do you think?
He's spinning so quick, I feel myself screwing myself into the floor. But good job.
Enough
yeah.
ad hominem.
Yeah,
here,
yeah.
Murphy.
DNC online, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
No. The truth is, I'm of two minds about it. In the macro, I'm like, oh, my God, this is what a State of the Union has come down to. Mm-hmm. We do a union hall speech, and we got bozos in the audience yelling at him, wearing red funny hats. I mean, God, if you step back, not a great day. But that's the world that Trump created. Mm-hmm. And Biden is trapped in it. And where Biden is, great fear in the Democratic ranks about his age, a lot of apprehension about this speech. Can he do it? Because he does stumble with his speech. And I got to give him credit. He said, all right, if I got to be in a reality show, I'm going to go up there and swing a chair. I thought he would turn green and start throwing cars around halfway through. I
mean, wasn't that bad.
No, but I'm not necessarily criticizing it. I have been calling for him to do this kind of stuff. I kind of hate to see it there, but he doesn't have a choice. So I thought it was effective. It rallied his troops. And even though he stumbled a lot, his mind was sharp as a tack. He's Einstein compared to Trump. I give him a win.
You know, Sean Hannity's calling him jacked up Joe, sort of suggesting openly on the Republican side that he must be taking drugs to get him to that point. How does he keep that going, though? Because it was stunning how different that appeared from what we've all been seeing for weeks. What's the strategy going forward? And should he do more interviews, do more events where we can see him more often?
Let Biden be Biden. Yeah, he's going to stumble. He stumbled last night. It didn't really matter. It's priced in. And so I think the more people see him, the harder it is to push this, like, dementia-addled Joe line. And so he should do it. He should do interviews with local anchors. He should do interviews with national anchors. He should connect with people, which is really his strength. Yeah.
Short interviews, let him do his stuff, let him let his hair down, let him call Trump some names, which will get under Trump's skin. He did make one big strategic mistake last night, in my view. And, you know, I'm anti-Trump. I'm a right-wing nut, a lot of policy disagreements. I'll vote for him over Trump. I'm waiting to see him stop bragging about the economy because he's off tone there. He is not where the voters are. He's got to be, we're doing the hard work to turn it around. I'm on your side, the other guy isn't. And prosecute that argument, because right now when he goes into the greatest economy ever and solved all your problems, nobody believes him. And that is a bad note they keep hitting. I think it's him, and it's not helping him. He's got to change that tone a little to go where the voters are, not where his kind of defensive instincts
because
are.
The numbers are pretty good for him.
The economic numbers.
But the people don't feel that way.
Perception lags.
So how do you change that?
Well, he was better last night on vision for the future. It wasn't all about give me credit for the past. It was about where I'm taking the country moving forward. So I give him high marks for that. Mike's right, though. He's got to empathize a little more, which is typically his strength, with the struggles of American families who are really having a hard time with higher prices at the grocery store and in other places.
The key thing is expectations were very low. He exceeded them, and he showed his party he can fight. which is the first step toward a comeback that I don't know if you'll get, but it was the right first step.
What'd you make of the Republican response, Katie Britt?
You know, again, in the age of Trump, she was the chief of staff to one of the most effective senators, Richard Shelby of Alabama, old cigar and martini Paul. And now in this new world, she's got to do like Shatner and drag, bad melodrama theater here, which was embarrassing. She is so much smarter and more capable than the persona she's had to adapt to survive in Republican politics. So I felt a little sorry for her. And it was, of course, comically, hilarious disaster. I thought Marco Rubio should send her a water bottle today to kind of join the club of bungled State of the Union responses. By the way, everybody bungles it. It's the worst gig in politics.
Yeah, you almost wonder whether they should stop doing this, both sides, because it seems like nobody gets it right.
I was involved in doing one now, and it's like, hey, you know, the White House rings. I had a governor, Christy Whitman. Hey, run through the minefield for us, will you?
Yeah.
You know, so, but totally bungled, bad acting. Not that important in the big thing, but she was a meteor, and it stunted her and kind of earned because she is working under her talent in this circus she has decided to join.
Yeah.
Classic no-win situation, but she was maybe the worst in modern history. I mean, it was like the most appalling high school acting that you could imagine. She said breathtaking and then literally held her breath.
Yeah, although you think about like Bobby Jindal, Marco Rubio, some of the
bad,
the
bad but
one.
Not that bad.
Okay.
Well, then she's an achiever. Set the record.
Nikki Haley won, dropped out this week after winning Vermont, the Republican stronghold.
She's now president of Vermont.
You know, you've been saying for years that the Republicans are going to fight back and that Trump's going to go down. Clearly, you were wrong about that.
I was wrong.
I mean, he's got a total control of the party. I mean, he's got Lara Trump, his daughter-in-law, now running the RNC.
Yeah, you won't be able to find a copying machine or
his
desk when she's done.
His legal bills.
Acid strip the whole place.
I mean, at this point, I mean, Donald Trump is the Republican Party, isn't he?
Well, I won't go that far. He controls the apparatus because he's the strong plurality, even majority candidate now. I thought a year ago that Biden's trouble, there was a lot of creaks in the party about, God, we can't go with Trump again, we're going to lose. They were worried about Biden. They haven't been worried for 6 months because of his plummeting numbers. And everybody running against Trump in the primary ran the same campaign. I'm for Trump. Vote for me. And finally, Nikki Haley found her voice after she was dead. It's been the biggest dead cat bounce for a month in American history. So that's over now. I was hoping she'd win. I had no faith she would. So the question is not the Republicans in the base nominating world where Trump's got, you know, three quarters of them. It'll be those suburban Republicans in the end who don't like Biden but don't like Trump. What do they do? Will Trump underperform? And can Biden have a comeback? Because if the country wants to fire Biden in October the way they do today, maybe today before the State of the Union, which hopefully helped him, then Trump can win.
I'm not sure the Trump campaign actually believes that they need suburban Nikki Haley Republicans. I think they can make up for that group with working class blacks and Latinos who used to be part of the Democratic coalition. I think they're wrong about that. But I want to give Mike some credit for a second. He was right about there being a market in the Republican Party a year ago for a Trump alternative. There just wasn't a product that could sell to that market because nobody struck the right tone. Nobody performed really well as a candidate. The one person who had the potential to do it, Ron DeSantis, turned out to be a complete dud, which, by the way, should inform all of our thinking about these primary candidates. There's a big gap between a candidate in theory and a candidate in fact.
But Chris Christie tried, Mike Pence tried, and went nowhere, that message. Asa Hutchinson tried, he went nowhere.
They were a little too anti-Trump. Yeah. I think you had to be, as Mike says, beyond Trump.
Move beyond Trump. She was positioned. She just didn't have the spine to do it. She should have said, I was there, I supported him, I saw him at his best, then I saw him start to change, et cetera, et cetera. But no, she waited until the end, and then all of a sudden it was claws out too late, and it was already over. Her shot was New Hampshire, and she blew it.
So bottom line on this week when Donald Trump essentially became the nominee with Nikki Haley dropping out, if the election were held today, does Donald Trump win?
Boy, it's so close, but if you put a gun to my head, I'd say Trump now, maybe Biden later.
I'm not sure because we haven't priced in the State of the Union, and I think a lot of the Biden problem is related to perceptions of his age and competence, a lot of which he answered last night. So I'm not sure today.
All right, up next, the panel is back to talk Oscar predictions.
Are we saying there's a chance that when we push that button, we destroy the world?
Oppenheimer is widely expected to dominate at this year's Oscars and is almost a shoo-in for best film, but wasn't actually our favorite movie, because we are the movie experts. Back with our panel, Mike Murphy and Brian Goldsmith. Rapid fire. Brian, tell me, favorite actor, favorite actress, favorite movie?
Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer. Carey Mulligan in Maestro, absolutely incredible. And Oppenheimer, of course, for best picture.
Total Grinch. Don't tell my 10-year-old I didn't like Barbie. I didn't really love Oppenheimer either. I'm way out there. And I'm in the guild. Yeah. Real quick, I'm Team Giamatti all the way of Holdover, and I want Divine Joy Randolph to get best supporting. She was magnificent in that. Carey Mulligan, too, for me. Not my prediction of what'll happen, but who I'm hoping for.
And favorite film of the year?
Oh, boy. I think Holdovers.
I loved Holdovers. It's but I picked for favorite actor, Paul Giamatti. It was so great. Emma Stone, what a weird performance, but really amazing in her Poor Things. And I loved American Fiction. I thought it was the most creative, interesting, smart, funny movie. And as great as Oppenheimer was, I much enjoyed watching American Fiction.
Overrated.
Yeah.
I'm a one-man crusade. They're not bad movies, but the production design in Barbie, they ought to win everything.
A lot of great movies this year. All right, congrats to all the nominees. Here's some video of this year's Oscars nominees luncheon, where everyone, for at least a moment, was a winner.
They must have lost our invitation.
Yeah, somehow. Thank you guys for being here. This was really fun, especially to have both of you together.
Our pleasure.
Our thanks to Brian and to Mike and to Congressman Adam Schiff and to you for listening. Thanks so much for being with us. We hope you like and review our podcast and tell people about it. It's the only way we can get the word out there. Also, feel free to send me a note in social media. We'd love to hear your feedback. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.